Empire of the Sun.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Good. We're almost at the halfway point somehow, and I don't know how I feel about this. It's just everything's been a blur, I guess. So that's standard.
It's been a week. Yeah, you guys will remember when everything went to crap last year in March. That was the DeAndre Hopkins trade as well. Me and Kevin were both super busy with that stuff, more so you. And then, wouldn't you know it, this March, Kevin, they get J.J. Watt. So this week has been, it feels like Thursday of next week already, but it's Thursday of this week. It's been a long one in the offices. And, of course, with the Suns as well, beating the Lakers on Tuesday, Booker's ejection, just a lot going on. You want to get into it, pal?
Let's get into it.
All right. So since we last conveyed on the – that's not how you use conveyed. since we last
met. Convened.
Convened. So close, yet so far. Since we last spoke to each other on a recorded thing that people listen to, that Hornets game, which feels like a year ago, we recorded the day before that. That was when Book got fouled at the end of the game, wasn't called, but certainly not something worth talking about, especially now. And that was one of those games, again, where the Suns didn't really match the energy or exceed the energy of the opposition, and Charlotte came in and played super well. The Bulls game, another one of those where they were just kind of around for about 2.5 quarters, 3 quarters, and then eventually they got the energy just in time to make things happen. They beat Minnesota. That was Devin Booker looking around, seeing that energy again, and just taking over the game. And then the Laker win, which was one of the best wins of the year. Where are you at, Kevin, with this? It's become a theme with this team of like playing down, playing up to their competition. How much do you buy into that? The trend is certainly there. It's more complex than that, of course, but do you at least buy the trend that this is how the team is performing now, approaching the All-Star break?
I think so, but I think that it matters that they've gone like a month without just absolutely completely blowing a game, I think you could say. Like the Nets game was obviously bad. The Hornets game was bad, but I think like people just think it's the Hornets from a few years ago. That team's not completely terrible. You're going to get beat in this league if you just have an off night and your effort's not there and you don't match the energy. And they really haven't had like one of those where just everything's gone wrong, I would say. Half the Nets game maybe, but I think that's kind of my, I guess I'm optimistic now about this team. My view is this team finds ways when they're not clicking, they grind, and then they have some good players to lean on late. So I think they're in a really good spot as we go into the All-Star break here.
Yeah, it's stable, right? Because that's the key thing to kind of convey. Oh, I brought it back, Kev. My brain wanted to use that word.
He knows the words.
Because it can start to spiral when you play like this with your competition and stuff. And that's where our brains naturally went with the Oklahoma City loss, right? When they went 8-8, I remember walking to the parking garage and after that game and just kind of being like, oh man, is this, I don't think my head was necessarily in this space where like, this is where it starts to be like last year where they really start to tumble. It was just more like, is this going to be how the rest of this season goes? Is this going to be a battle for them to stay at 500 because they just cannot find this semblance of consistency, and they really tend to struggle against teams that are worse than them? Because remember, we had over the span of that like 3-week stretch, we had the loss to the Pistons and the loss to the Wizards as well, and it was starting to become a real concern. But it's not so much as a concern now as just like a fact of what they do. But just in a positive way where they're still able to find a way to win. And we should bring up Devin because He wins player of the month. He wins player of the week two out of the last 3 weeks in the Western Conference. And I think to kind of go back to our conversation last week about him getting snubbed and me and you kind of being meh or whatever about it, it's something that at least I've talked about a lot on this podcast. And I think you've co-signed is that we just hold him to a very high standard. And the guy that I expected for most of this season, I think I expected everyone to come out slow, but the guy that I expected for most of the season is the guy that we've been seeing in the past week. And in my opinion, I thought the best he's looked all year was the Laker game, because as our Down Under pod correspondent David Nash tweeted at halftime, he was making every single play correctly. It felt like every single pass that he made was the right one. They were running that junk defense that he's used to where they trap him high and he's got to work through and create a 4-on-3 situation or find the shooter in the corner or whatever. He was just breaking down the defense at an elite level that we've become accustomed to. And then that Minnesota game as well, where it's just ridiculous tough shots for him. We've seen him reach that level so many times, and he did consistently over this month, of course, but I feel like in the last two games especially, this is the level that I personally expected him at. And so that's why when he got snubbed and stuff, like the first like 10, 15 games of the season, he was fine, but nowhere near his standard. And I think this is the guy that you can expect more from them, and kind of just speaks to the ceiling of this team with everything that was working previously. Cause the main reason we were so optimistic about this team, Kevin, when we were talking about that 8-8 start or whatever, is because of all the things that were going right. The things that were going quote unquote wrong were Chris Paul not really playing up to his caliber and Book not playing up to his caliber, and those two figuring out their chemistry within the starting unit as well. Now that all of that has come together, they're just exploding and they're one of the best teams in the league. It's just great to see. I don't really know how else to put it.
It feels like the last month he's been having, you know, a quarter, and it's oftentimes been the first where he'll just put up 15 points to set the tone. And then he starts deferring. And I think that Lakers game was another good example. He didn't exactly do that, I don't believe, in the first quarter, but he, after he got fouled by KCP, he got mad and he just took over from there. And I think I used a bad word before he used a bad word to say that he's kind of starting to get in that level, like Steph and LeBron. I'm not going to put him there yet, even close, but just to the point of like he messes with teams. And by that, I mean, like you highlighted it in your recap and you said David did too, like that pass before halftime at the buzzer, he just takes it full court, draws a couple guys who are just like, no, you're not getting off a shot, and just makes a blazer pass to Mikal in the corner for a three.
And just jogs off the court.
And it's the scoring where he's targeted and doing it early, during it, doing it late, doing it when he's pissed off, doing it against the T-Wolves when he's feeling like the game just is starting to get out of hand and he just needs to take over. But he's also doing the easy play, easy in air quotes I'm doing, because that pass was harder than I think people would give him credit for, and that he saw it is a testament to where he's at. So I think that's kind of where he is right now. Like you said, he's playing up to that level, probably best level he's played at in his career, although it's obviously maybe a month, not even, that he's been doing it. But that's what we expected, and I think that's why, you know, people kind of thought he should be an all-star, and we last week were like, yeah, but he hasn't done that all year. So I think he's justified it now for sure.
Yeah, what you're talking about with the LeBron and Steph thing, that is superstar stuff. That is, you have ascended star status and you are now a superstar. And the fact that he can kind of at least briefly show that kind of stuff every now and then is incredibly encouraging for what you and I have expected for years now, and just talking about how the consistency in his improvement year to year, from just year one to year three, year one to year four, was so encouraging that you just expected him to be one of these guys like Dame, for example, who just keeps getting better every year. And I think that's going to come this year, and something that I talked about a lot when joining the shows or whatever and talking about Chris Paul coming here. And I was like, can I rule out Devin Booker making first team All-NBA this year? I don't know if I can rule it out. I think it's unlikely, but I can't rule it out because I don't know what like heights his game is going to reach at being on the court with Chris Paul and then just being with Chris Paul for an entire season and improving around him just based on how we know he improves already on his own. And in the system and around the players and in the franchise that he was in before, you add a Chris Paul, Monty Williams group to that. It just gets crazy. It gets nuts what his potential could be. And I think like, if you just think about it right now, like, gosh, he's certainly like third team all NBA right now, probably you would think at least. And then going from there, we'll just see how he plays. If he plays this way the rest of the year, he could approach that status as one of like the 2, 3, 4 best guards in the league right now, which is crazy to say, but also not something that's shocking or surprising considering the way that he's improved, like I said. And the team is in just such a golden spot when he's playing like this, because I think you can go through inconsistencies, Kevin. Something we're going to talk about to close the podcast is the trade deadline coming up. There was Blake Griffin talk today about a buyout and possibilities there, but Campaign was one of the, in my opinion, 3 or 4 most important players on this team for the first 20 games of the year. Book said it himself, like, our bench has bailed us out a lot of these games. They've been the reason we've been winning these games, not us. And Campaign's play fell off a cliff for just only two games. But Monty, who we've talked about a lot on this podcast, very quick to make adjustments, makes that adjustment, brings in Etuan Moore. And then during the Laker game, goes back to Campaign. So this is happening for like 5 or 6 games, and it just doesn't matter because Book is playing at this level. That's really what it means.
It's good to have options, and when a guy hits a rut, you know, that's why we talked about the value of Etuan Moore. Langston Galloway is not even in the rotation right now. But, you know, I thought it was good in the Lakers game that Campaign, he even had a couple of rough possessions early in that one where – I mean, he was partially having to do with that Malik Monk outburst in that Charlotte game a few games before, but against the Lakers, he kind of found himself again and obviously closed the game with that Dario lineup. And I think that's important because I think if we're speaking about why this team is where they're at as a whole, it's because like they don't fall in ruts and stay in them very long. It seems like, you know, Campaign was there for a week. He kind of got out of it with the Lakers. You know, Frank Kaminsky comes in and gives a lot of minutes, and that, you know, you add that up over the course of a few weeks even. That's less run for Dario. That's less wear on Ayton, all that kind of stuff. So I think just the depth in this season where it's kind of crammed together and it's weird already. I think that's huge for them, especially as you hit the All-Star break and, you know, it looks like everyone's relatively healthy still.
Yeah. And to close out on this Book point, I forgot where I was going to go for a second, but just essentially it stabilizes them in a way that like nothing else really could before, I guess is kind of the way to put it. And it's just going to put them in such, like I said, like a golden spot there. I got where I was going. So you remember in the first half how the Lakers, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Laker game here, where he's just Bridges and Crowder just being left. LeBron's like, okay, we got Montrez at center. I'm gonna have to protect the rim tonight. So he's basically the one defending DeAndre at the rim a lot. So Bridges and Crowder are just being left the whole time, and they just keep knocking down shots. And to end the point on Book, that's the point his supporting cast is at now, too. We kind of glance over it sometimes and forget that he played against his defense for 3 years in a row and couldn't do much with it at times and couldn't win with it a lot because his teammates weren't knocking down shots. And that's going to be a thing to watch, like when we get to the playoffs and things like that, of course. But for now, those guys are hitting those shots, and it shows what a difference it is when his supporting cast can get it done, because Bridges and Crowder were even making plays off the dribble a little bit, and just how much it helps him when he can make those passes and it's not to whichever random son you want to name, Daniel House Jr., who is one of the worst examples I could think of because he's actually like a capable NBA player, but you get what I'm saying. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the ejection at all? It happened like 2 days ago, so it's kind of like not news anymore, but it was a hot topic to discuss. You and I were kind of differing opinions on it. I thought it was baloney. You thought it was also not a good call, but at the same time, he's got to control his emotions. Is that kind of where you were at?
Mine is kind of just from the view of he was doing that in the Charlotte game and got a tech when it was obvious he was going that direction. And the Lakers game was like that too, where he was just on them consistently for too long. And so, like, to me, it's just like they're human beings who make mistakes, and he got under their skin and he should have seen that coming, because the Lakers got two that were questionable as well. So even if that was unfair, which the Lakers said it was and didn't agree with it, then you just got to be smarter than that. That's as much as I'll say, because I don't think he should have been called, because those refs were obviously just not having a good time. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you just got to be smarter than that. And I think it's a fine lesson to go through this early in the season.
Yeah, even fans listening who have watched basketball for a while, or even just a really long time, like me and Kevin, we've all seen these games, and even fans who just hate refs in general, which is not hard to do right now recently, given the way that they've been performing the last couple of nights. We saw Montrez get a technical last night just for screaming and one to motivate himself. Even with that in mind, we just see these moments. I remember there was a game, I can't remember. You might remember this, actually, because you were probably covering the team. I was just there as a fan. Grant Hill got a technical in the fourth quarter of a game like 5 or 6 years ago, where he was just barely talking to the official, not really saying anything, and he just got tossed. And it was one of those moments where there were a couple technicals a couple minutes before. There was like a long break in there. There was like a scuffle or two, and there just becomes a point where refs jump from the point of they need to get a handle on the game to they have lost control of the game, and now they are overwhelmed by the game that they don't have control over anymore. And the Lakers game wasn't even really like that. I don't think it was a game they needed to really get control of. I just thought that it was a game where they needed to kind of almost reel themselves in. I think the technicals kind of made sense, like Vogel getting one or whatever, or LeBron getting one. Like, at a certain point, you need to call it, of course. But then with Book, it's just like the game kind of spirals there into something that I don't know if I necessarily agree with. And I know I don't agree with everything that Dan Bickley wrote on our site the other day about Book and the ejection and like what he has to learn from it. I do think that one little nugget in there that's important, though, is that I think it's an important thing to kind of understand when it's over. And that's kind of what you're talking about, right? Is that there's a tendency, if you just get on them every single possession, and look, they weren't good that night, obviously, and that's why he was on them all the time. But if you just get on them enough, like you can push them to the point where they're prone to making mistakes like that. It's their fault. It's not Book's fault, but there's a point of just like kind of realizing like they got to move on. They got to put it past them. And Crowder, it was funny hearing Crowder talk about it after the game, because he realized like, oh, Book is at that point where he's just seeing red. He's just like so upset at the way the game is being called right now that he basically, after the first tee got called, he was on his way to walking over to Book and grabbing him back / telling the referee, and started like talking to the referee on his own and saying like, oh, I said it and all this kind of stuff. I think the Book's going to get that in a couple of years, but it can head down the road where it gets to a point where it's actually a problem. Like, we do actually start talking about the fact that he gets too many technical fouls. Like, that is a thing that can develop at this. We're at like the very, very small stages of it, so it feels silly to discuss, but it can come in time.
I'm looking it up. He has 8, and we're like halfway through the season. So if he gets 16,
he's at 8 right now.
Yep. So. Ooh. A legitimate, like, if he stays on this pace, if he gets suspended for an important game, I don't know. Do you get suspended in the playoffs? I think, I don't know, but it's something to watch at least, just because of the pace even.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I was just about to look where he was at in terms of like the leaderboard and stuff, but 8's got to be pretty up there. So, not great, but I'll just something to like be mindful of, I guess, for the second half of the season. In that Laker game, Kevin, it kind of just happened, and I didn't really realize it until the end of the game and just seeing who was out there. But Dario was arguably the best player for the Suns that night. I think Mikal was great. Book was awesome. when he was out there, but he didn't play the whole game, of course. Dario plays the whole fourth quarter, and this is something worth bringing up for sure because of our conversation on the Nets game 2 to 3 weeks ago, where that was a clear point of like, take DeAndre out of the game. He doesn't have it tonight. He was not even that close to that bad in the Laker game. He was actually fine. He was solid. He had a couple of missed defensive rotations where he was just standing there and he should have been over there. But he was fine. And Dario just stayed in because he was playing well. It was a very important game. The matchup was there where there wasn't like a dominant center for him to match or whatever. But if you look at the Nets game, like they were playing Jeff Green at the five. It was the same kind of thing with the Lakers going small. And Dario stayed in. So I thought that it was an important thing and in like an important moment for them to get past to where they can play Dario down the stretch if he's the guy just playing well. And I think it was important for it to come in a game where DeAndre wasn't like melting down like the Nets game where he wasn't melting down necessarily. The play around him was kind of melting down. Like they were just going at him every single time. It's just what was happening. So I just thought it was important.
And the Charlotte game was the one where we finally saw like Monty just took DA out down the stretch. He did not like them attacking him on switches. And he actually said like DA is just not, I don't remember his exact words, but he said, and we didn't bring this up probably enough afterwards, that he basically said DA on point guards is a no-go. It's not going well right now. To me, DA is good at what he's good at. He's really important rebounder. He gets extra possessions. He's a good rim protector right now. As long as he doesn't have those like full quarters of just like he's breaking down, I think they're going to be fine. And I think Monty going to Dario is huge because that kind of felt like one of those, like if you're in a playoff series, the Lakers were just, you know, making sure there was no rim attacks from Ayton, making sure Book was locked down, letting the wings shoot. But then when you have Dario in there, their game plan kind of is blown up. And I think that's important when you head to the postseason because teams are basically going to be scheming against two very different Suns teams and you don't know which one's kind of going to get going and gain traction within a single game. So I think that we're at a halfway point and they already kind of have that going for them is huge.
It's not like it, that's an excellent point because it's at the start of the fourth quarter, it's like there's possessions where Dario and Chris, it'll be like dribble handoff, pick and roll. And like Dario's having a screen set for him by Chris. That's not what they do with DeAndre, obviously. It's just a different skill set. I do think DeAndre actually has that in his game and he can get to that point in a couple of years or maybe even as soon as next season, depending on how he develops and stuff. But I think that's such a great point, like just matchup wise as well. And I wanted to bring it up because I mentioned like being super confused by DeAndre a month, 6 weeks ago. I think we kind of got a feel for what we're getting right now. And he's kind of gotten out of that spell, which was so confusing because the Chicago game was the worst of it for three quarters. It was everything that we were talking about in terms of what's going on out here, what exactly is happening. And then he was awesome in the fourth quarter, had one of those signature stretches that we've seen from him ever since he was a rookie and he swung the game and they won that game. The Minnesota game was what me and you kind of disagreed about in the bubble, but I'm starting to see more of those games now this season where I wanted more out of him in the bubble. But the game you were seeing, Kevin, that we saw in that Minnesota game was that he wasn't doing anything wrong and he was doing a couple of things right. He was making like a key post bucket here, a finish through contact there, a good rim protection there. He wasn't like great, but he was good. He was solid and he wasn't messing anything up necessarily. And I didn't want to give him, I didn't feel like it was fair to just give him credit for not screwing up. But I do think that at a certain point, if you're just solid and reliable, that can really become a skill. I just had higher expectations for his play as well, I think. But in that Minnesota game, like that is the DeAndre that you want right now, at least while we're going through this stretch of like figuring out what exactly the type of player that he's going to become on a team like this, where they just need that guy. If they get that guy, they're set. And the Laker game was more of that. It was, like I said, there were a couple where like LeBron was backing down someone like Book in the post. And it's like, you're 6 feet from the rim on the other side. You got to see that you're going to have to help on this. There were two or three of those. And that's it. And everything else was great. And Dario is just amazing. And that's why he played. So I think that if he can just come back and in the Warriors game tonight, we're recording this before the Warriors game. If he can come back tonight and just be that guy again, and then just more or less be that guy, he doesn't have to be the dominating hair on fire four game stretch guy that we saw. That guy is more important in my opinion. Now, of course, you'd rather take dominating, but if you can get that guy, that's awesome.
I think you said it right after the Chris Paul trade or a week after when we were discussing that trade just changes. I don't know about if expectations are the right word, but they don't need DeAndre Ayton to be an all-star like now. And I think that's like what you said about the Minnesota game is we just need solid play. You do limit Karl Anthony Towns because you're a big dude who can move your feet, get in his face. You get rebounds. He went 9 of 11 that game. Not really the focal point for most of it, but I think that's really what he can be. You don't need to put all this pressure on him to become this, like, we got to dump it down. Why isn't he getting post touches? Why isn't he getting rim rolls? Just do like big man stuff. And I think that's all he's got to focus on. And I've been saying that since like his rookie year, but if he just focuses on that, he's too good of an athlete to be a negative. And I think he's on his way to being, a really important piece on a team, because like you look at it, and I said it maybe a few podcasts ago, like it's important to have that kind of athlete when you have stretches against Joel Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns, even Giannis. So I think that's that he's meeting those expectations most of the time. He still has those like things snowball him over two or three possessions and you got to pull him and calm him down. But I think he's holding his own, I think. And I think that's what this team needs. And obviously by the record, it's enough to make them a really good team.
Yeah. I think the thing that frustrates Monty the most with criticism, and he brings it up a lot when he talks about how well DeAndre has played in a certain game or whatever, is that he has undeniable value as a rim runner that he just brings every single game because he's just too big, too strong, too fast. Like it's just, there's too much going there for him where he drags defensive attention with him. And especially for the Lakers in a game where they were, it'd be interesting if they had Gasol and they had Davis, and hopefully we'll get to see that in the second half of the season, if they're going to do the same thing. If they're going to defend the Suns the same way, they obviously shouldn't because it didn't go well. But are they going to specifically bring that much attention to Ayton? Where are they going to prioritize? Because it was basically, we are throwing everything at these three guys, your three best players, and we're taking the Bridges guy and the Crowder guy. We're forcing them to make plays, and they did, and they lost. Where do they go in terms of game planning for Ayton? Because I think that was the stretch, especially in the Nets game, where they're just attacking him over and over again. I was like, can he get played off the floor? And also, our offense is going to be at a point where our defense is going to be at a point where with the Suns offense, they don't really pay that much attention to him as much. And if they do, can DeAndre punish them enough to make them start to pay attention more? I don't think it's gotten to that point yet, because even in his rookie year when he was super inconsistent, we just saw teams double him all the time anyway. And I think it's going to continue for quite a while, but it's important for him to have that consistency to some degree. So it becomes that. But again, that's like a super interesting, you want to talk about a playoff series thing with him. Like if you're in game three of a series and in his first two games, the Suns have like, or it's 1-1 or whatever, and he hasn't been good in the first two games, do defenses start to just like leave him in the third game, like to the extent to which you can, like obviously not leaving him wide open, but you get what I'm saying. We just hit on campaign and Etuan a bit earlier, Kevin. That's a very interesting development that's happened with those minutes kind of switching, because I think we all, me included, with the way Cam was playing, he was so awesome in the first 20 games of the season, kind of looked at it and said, like, the Suns have a backup point guard, they're fine. If that's the case, and I think Max on Suns Twitter put it this way, like, if Monty's lost faith in him, finding a backup point guard on the trade market all of a sudden becomes a thing to discuss. We talked about either last episode or two episodes ago about like trade deadline, not really anything to do. But if they are still at that point where they're at right now with backup point guard, I think it starts to become something seriously worth exploring, because you need that third ball handler, Kevin.
Yeah, it's kind of a matter of Etuan. I mean, like the Lakers game, actually, I'm looking at the numbers. I didn't even realize how few minutes they played combined. And that's probably a trust issue, because just down the stretch, Monty has obviously just been going with who he trusts. And yeah, I don't know what names are on the trade market yet. I think we'll probably get into that a few weeks from now. But it is a concern, just because if you have the ability to go out there and get a guy who's just certified that type of dude, I think you got to consider it. Then again, like, is Etuan Moore, if you give him more than 5 minutes, is he going to score 10 points and have a couple assists? Probably. So it's a matter of who's out there, I guess. But I think they're one injury away from not having enough ball handlers. And that stretch where Campaign was hurt or whatever, and they didn't have Book, that was a big problem, because Javon Carter has just not been that dude who you can have handling the ball. So it's like, who do you go get? So I think they are a little short there. We talked about it last week. Big man obviously is another issue, just where they're at with Damian Jones now in the Lakers. So there are going to be some opportunities to improve the roster, I think. And it's just a matter of, okay, this team's legit. And that's an important place to be when you head to the trade deadline, because if you have a vet who's just wanting to sign on a minimum with a contender, they're going to put themselves up there and be in the conversation, I think.
If Blake gets bought out in like 2 weeks, where do you stand in terms of like the progression points? I believe they should absolutely give him a call, see what's up. What is he looking for? What kind of role does he want? Would you be willing to give him 20 minutes, Kevin? I think like that's like the bare minimum. I don't think you can expect him to come here and say like, I'll play 12 some night, 20 the other. I think it has to be like a defined role for him.
Is he better than Frank Kaminsky right now? Because
yes,
that's where we're at. And he's like that perfect four who can move the ball, has a little more dribble equity than, you know, Frank. And if you have him and Dario, or even him and Ayton out there, I think that's something you got to talk about. And obviously the Chris Paul, I don't know if they have a relationship that's kind of gotten better over the years, but if they want to re-team up, that's obviously an easy pull if Chris Paul wants that. So that's a super interesting thing that we can look at, because has he still not dunked? He's not going to dunk, but he can pass from the fourth spot. And I think he's a little underrated as far as just IQ and all that.
That's what I was going to say. I underrated was where I was going to go to. I think that his passing and just his IQ and the way that he moves within an offense and can function, especially in an offense like this, I think that this is, if I was him looking at like just systems and like groups that I wanted to play with, I don't see how any other team could beat out the Suns just with the way they play 0.5. Just have him. If I was James Jones, I would just send him some of those Frank minutes from when he was playing well and had the space, you know, to kind of operate in like some of those like nice, like three dribble takes to the rim that Frank had, and be like, this can be you. Like, you see this quick pick and pop stuff he's running with Dario. Like, this could be you. I think that he should really want to come here. Like, it's obviously, I think that the crutch with him would be 3-point shooting, and you wouldn't want him to be a guy that's taking like 4 or 5 threes a game or whatever. He started to incorporate that more in his game, of course, but you just want him to kind of come out there and just be a playmaking four, basically, who is sometimes it just happens with guys where they just lose it. But you're still talking about a guy who knows where to be on winning teams and has been in a lot of stuff. And again, 2 years ago, I believe it was with Detroit, where he put in that third All-NBA year, he was nuts. Like, he was still playing at a super duper high level. So in terms of the JJ Watt thing, Kevin, I definitely think he's got gas left in the tank. I think that the guys that suffer, obviously, like Frank's role would be just gone. And basically would be replaced. But with that, when Frank plays, Cam Johnson is really the guy that doesn't play as much. Jay's minutes go down a little bit as well. Mikal really hasn't been the guy that I thought he was in terms of minutes. He's actually only at 32 this year. I would have to look right now in terms of how many games he's played where he's played over 35 minutes a game. But we saw him last year, especially. Monty played him a ton when he started to get going, and especially just in playing him like 35 plus minutes a game. So he's reached 35 minutes a game in 13 of the Suns' games. He's broken 37 only four times. So he hasn't played a super insane amount by any means. I think that maybe his minutes go down a bit, Jay's go down a bit, and then Cam Johnson is a guy who's basically become like the ninth or tenth man, which I think is fine for a year in trying to make things happen with Blake. I wouldn't really disagree with it. Would you?
I will say Frank is literally shooting, well, not literally, but almost shooting 10% more from field goal range and from three than Blake Griffin. So the lack of shooting there is maybe just jumps up everything that we just said. But maybe it's situational. I honestly never watched Detroit because I don't want to. So that's my bad for not really knowing what's up there. But
I haven't seen him this year at all. Not once, because when the Suns played him, he wasn't playing.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting just why is he not shooting, because he's got to be a better just straight up spot shooter than 31%, 32% right now from three and 37% overall. That's not good. So
if he's like a mobile, that's a problem. That's where I'm like, okay, like you're losing like the dribble creation that he can provide as well, because like that's the thing I'm talking about, like underrated passing IQ, like dribble creation that he can do, like the Frank thing, but like a little bit better. That's a good point though. Like we shouldn't just roll past it. Frank has played super well this year. The team as a whole is playing super well. You don't really want to shake it up if you don't have to, but in the same way where it was like, it's kind of like the Chris Paul trade, isn't it, Kevin? It's like, good thing running 8-0 in the bubble. Ricky and Devin are playing super well together. Kelly, king of the vibes, but it's Chris freaking Paul at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, like it's Blake freaking Griffin, and he can help you win a lot more games. I have been saying that I don't think that the Suns should make any super short-sighted trade or anything like that to like try and chase a run to make the Western Conference Finals or the Finals or make win a championship or whatever. I'm still fully there. But with that in mind, like if Blake's bought out and you can sign him, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. It's fortifying your bench. It's just a numbers thing. Like they have a really deep rotation, but if you can upgrade it and use that extra roster spot, because you did lose a big, you need to consider it and you need to talk about it. So yeah, I'm if money's not an issue, that's not a thing that you just gloss over.
Kevin, I hope you love something as much as Devin Booker loves the three-point contest. He's back for the fifth time. I love it. I think I would like to think I would be the same way, where if like they just kept asking me, I'd be like, okay.
Sure. Did you hear? I don't know if you saw, Chris Paul was asked about the skills competition today at shoot around, and he was just like, my kids are going, my dad's going, so I'm just gonna do it, I guess. Like, it wasn't a really great reason, but just like, yeah, I guess I'll do it, whatever.
I think it actually helps that it's the day of the game, you know, because you're going to be there already. You have to be there maybe a couple more hours early, of course, but outside of that, it's just you're in and out in a day. You don't have to go through this whole thing on Saturday. You're already there anyway for the All-Star game. So yeah, are you excited to watch? I always like the All-Star game. I always like the Saturday night as well. I think that it's not something where you can just go in with sky high expectations, but it's always just fun to me.
Just don't go clubbing, please, guys. Just don't. Yeah. I know it's tempting because it's Atlanta. Just don't.
Yeah, Cam Johnson placed on health and safety protocols today. He's out. And of course, that's like a big thing to watch with the break over the next week, and restrictions starting to be lifted across the country a little bit more here as the case numbers have gotten much, much better in certain areas, including Arizona, where it's getting much better. You got any plans for the NBA break, Kevin? More Cardinal stuff coming? What's up?
I do not. I'm just going to enjoy that game. Take a rest after this week seemed long. I don't know. It's busy. It's, that's good. We can't complain.
Perfect for me. Apparently if you stock up on vacation days enough, Kevin, they just like stop stocking up. I had to learn this like 2.5 years ago and actually start using them. Yes. I reached that point again. So I've taken, basically got a week off now after today. Really good timing, like you said, because this week was a long one. How many games do the Cardinals win next year to end it? I'm putting you on the spot. Completely random.
10 games.
Whoa. What place in the division?
I have no idea. They have to do well in free agency, and they have a lot to do. So,
yeah.
I'll be an optimistic guy since we have vibes here, Kellen. We have lots of vibes.
Yeah, I go eight again. Just the division, man. The division's brutal. Stafford's really good. I don't think people realize how good Stafford is.
Hey, like, complaining Russ Wilson.
Yeah, wait, yeah. So the Seahawks are the big one, right? Because Are you in on the Niners being legit still? I am.
Their coaching staff's good, but if their defense drops off because of that change, I don't know.
Yeah, lots come in the coming weeks. All right, thanks for joining our Cardinals podcast, everyone. Sorry, I hadn't asked Kevin that at all. This I was just curious on where he stood about next year. I had no idea. Kyler Murray's really good at football, Kevin, and he's going to be much better next year. So that helps, even if his coach has no idea what he's doing most of the time. All right, everyone. Hope you guys enjoy the All-Star Sunday. A week from today, after the Warriors game at Portland, really fun one to come back from the break from. And then I believe they return home against Indiana. So two good games. We'll kind of look into the second half of the schedule a bit more on next week's episode, probably after the Portland game. We'll kind of break it down a bit more because we didn't do that when it came out. April in particular is a gauntlet. It looks really challenging, as we were expecting, with the first half being a little bit more light. We'll be back then to talk about it. Bye.